When I announced to my family 20 years ago that I was looking to pursue a police career, they were very upset.
What made you make that really big decision?
Well, I came out of the military in the 90s, and I moved to Atlantic City, and I was working for the Teamsters. I was a Teamster. I actually was working on the tunnel job, and I kept getting laid off and laid off. And then
Tunnel job to Brigantine?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, the connector. So I kept getting laid off. So a friend of mine was like, hey, you live in Atlantic City. Why don't you take this police test, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it was just something that never appeared before. It wasn't a lifelong dream. It was a good job with benefits, and you're outside, you're interacting with the community. Something I kind of liked, and I had a background in the military, so I had that disciplinary background. So I gave it a shot. That was my entry level in law enforcement.
So you recently retired. You were in the force for how long?
Approximately 17 years I worked for public safety.
Wow.
Yes, and unfortunately I had a traumatic injury on the job I was working. It required many surgeries, and unfortunately I couldn't retain my position as a police officer.
It's got to be the toughest time to be a cop right now. It's got to be.
Yeah, I noticed that, you know, it's a big difference from when I started. There's a lot more oversight. It's a lot of micromanaging where, you know, a cat in a tree call, a supervisor would show up, you know, and then now they want to report for that and make sure it's on camera and make sure you speak to a witness. Those type of things, like, it's a lot of very time-consuming job where it was years ago when I started, there was 420 police officers. Now there's less than 300, and now they're tasked with 5 times as much work with paperwork.
So where did that fear, where all that paperwork was necessary, is that because it was a CYA cover your, so that because it was a litigious society that was starting to grow, that the cops needed to protect, dot their I's and cross their T's?
No, I think it was never a fear. Fear was not the word. I think it's now we're in society, and not just in policing, but all the way around in radio, in on the internet. Everything's a liability. So sure, is it, you know, CYA? Absolutely. And I think it's just a trickle-down effect. And there's some, you know, bottom feeders or some flounder lawyers out there that'll pick up on anything. And you see it all the time in the newspaper. You know, it's a lot of accountability now these days to be a police officer. You know, you have to be more than just a beat cop. You know, you have to be a social worker. You have to be a guidance counselor. You have to be a mentor. You have to be a father. You have to be a mother. And you have to be a police officer. All that. And in the city that I worked in, there was also a pay cut. There was also a reduction in force. So, you know, from 20 years ago or from 18 years ago when I started, it's a big difference.
How did you get interested in canine policing? Because I want to talk for the next few minutes about what people think in regards to canine policing, what it does well and how it really helps a police officer, and some of the misperceptions that people might be thinking when they see a dog. So let's separate fact from fiction.
Sure. So I got involved, in the military. I got involved. I worked overseas, and they were implementing German Shepherd, Czechoslovakian Shepherds into the military, and I was real passionate about it. However, I was a radio operator. In order to change my MOS, I would have to sign up for 4 more years to get
your MOS?
MOS, military occupation. So my military occupation was communications. I was attached to artillery. And to get into a different occupation, you would have to sign on for 4 more years. So that wasn't happening. But I never lost that passion. So I was, you know, I always had dogs growing up and everything. And then when I became a rookie police officer in the early 2000s, I saw the impact the dogs had on the street and the de-escalation and, how a presence of a barking dog can really de-escalate a situation. And
that's a really important tactic that a police officer needs to understand, how to use de-escalation of a potential out-of-control situation.
Oh, absolutely. And dogs, that's one of our number one goals, using canines in Atlantic City.
And sometimes horses are used in that way as well because they're huge.
You see them all the time in Eagles games. You ever go to the Eagles games? They don't want you walking down a certain street. They put a horse there. I'm not walking down that street.
Something about that big, beautiful animal where you just pay it huge amounts of respect.
Sure. Absolutely. And, you know, same goes for the canines, like say. So a little bit background on my dog, Mike Clancy, my partner.
Clancy.
Clancy's
what kind of?
He's a Belgian Malinois.
Say that again now.
A Belgian Malinois.
Looks like a shepherd of some sort, long snout.
Looks very similar. It's in the family of the German Shepherd. Pretty cool history. So after World War II, you know, scientists went into East Germany and West Germany and started using dogs in police work and were basically using the West German dogs, the Rin-Tin-Tin type looking dogs. So we brought them back to the United States in the 40s and 50s, implemented them in police work. And after years of overbreeding, they just discovered dogs were getting hips dysplasia, cancer, different things when you overbreed a certain line. So now the scientists go back into Germany and discover, hey, there's a Czechoslovakian East German dog that we can start using that hasn't been overbred yet. You know, back in the First World War is when they first started using military dogs.
Smelling for dead bodies or bombs?
Tracking bombs. Sentry work mostly, guard dog protection. Obviously, the barking is a very good tool to use as a military or police officer. So they go back and find this East German dog and brought that back. And for a long time in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, we were using these Czechoslovakian dogs. So I guess in the 90s, the same thing had happened. They overbred this Czechoslovakian dog, and the strain was getting so thin that they were getting a lot of cancer, hips dysplasia, you know. So the same scientists go back to Germany, East Germany, Slovakia, France, and they're looking for a different dog, possibly using police work. And here they see this Malinois, and they tested them, and they're hardier and more agile. They're a little smaller, but they're the new police dogs. Like, you know, 90% of the police dogs coming out now are in Belgian Malinois, and I was lucky enough to get one.
Are you always with? Do you have Clancy now?
I sure do. Sure.
How did that happen? You get to retire with your partner? Is that a way of describing what happened?
Absolutely. Good question. I tried out for canine. It's an elite unit. So I tried out for approximately four times, and fourth time I came in number one.
It's that tough.
But
they'll allow you to come back and try again
as many times as you want. And I was getting older. I was in my late 30s when I.
You didn't give up. That means you wanted that gig,
man. I wanted it.
Yeah.
I wanted. It's a passion for me. So, went back, scored number one out of a large group of men. And I was able to get into the unit. The problem is I didn't have a dog.
You got to bring your own dog. Is that, am I hearing that right?
Here's what happens.
Well, there has to be a dog available for you.
Correct.
And when they say, like Clancy, they team you up and that's your partner for life. Is that the way they do it?
As long as he passes all the criteria to become a police officer, police canine officer, he's with me for the rest of my life.
Because they make that connection with you and your voice.
There's a bond there that you can't break. You know,
you can't just pass him off to somebody else.
It would never work.
I didn't know that. I don't think most people realize how tight you are with your partner.
And that's the most common misconception about canine. It's not that you're ignorant. You're uneducated. And so was I. You know, if you don't work with a dog or if you're not part of a canine program and you're uneducated, well, that's when rumors start. And then that's when, you know, the misconceptions are like, well, you know, police dogs are elite. Police dogs, they're only one person dog. It doesn't work like that. And they're bonded to me. But if you understand police dogs, if you understand dogs in general, dogs are doing the right thing. They go back to their breed. Basically, they go back to their heritage where they ran in packs like wolves and they lived in caves. Okay. So there's always going to be an alpha dog. So you have to, work with your dog and make sure that I'm the alpha. You're part of my pack.
He sees you as the leader of the pack.
Not at first. At first, he came out. Like, you look, when they go out, these recruiters go out throughout the world and recruit 20, 40 dogs to bring back here to sell to police departments throughout the world. They look for alpha dogs that are not going to back down to a fight, that are loyal, that are, you know, well-rounded dogs, socially, physically. That's the kind of dogs they're looking for. So when I got him, he was... Green.
Clancy.
Clancy, yeah.
You gave him the name?
No, it's a good story. When I got him, the breeder had called him Elios. His name was Elios.
Because he was born where again?
In France. He was bred in France, and Elios was his name. And I had this real cool name, Boda Zeffa. I wanted to name him, you know, real cool 90s name. And so long story short, at the time, the city was in a little financial crisis. And they were asking us to go around and recruit funds from local businesses and local establishments that were willing to give some funds towards purchasing.
So this was not a part of a public safety budget at this time. It wasn't common for that to be the case?
It was and it wasn't. You know, there was so much money to be for purchasing of canines. But they also ask, if you're really that passionate about getting into canine, you know, you're willing to do the extra mile and also recruit some extra funds. And the extra funds could be harnesses, leashes, leads, vests, bulletproof vests.
And retrofitting your cruiser, your vehicle.
Correct. And having vehicles, by the way. So
and food and healthcare.
Healthcare, you're talking a lot of money. So we do our part as canine officers to go out and recruit some money, some capital to put back into the whole canine unit. So with that being said, I started off with one of my I'll give him a little soundbite. So I went to the Irish pub in Atlantic City. And
you were really just knocking on doors, trying to maybe collect a little from here, hoping to gain, what, $8,000?
It was $7,000, okay. And I went around to different – I made about 4 or 5 phone calls, and everybody – I got to give them credit. Everybody was like, John, come see me. I got something for you. Come see me. I got something for you. So I live in the city, so I walked over to the Irish pub, and I saw Miss Kathy Burke, and I said, hey, listen. I said, I finally got canine because everybody was pushing for me.
That means
said,
you got okayed, certified. You are ready to go, but you need a dog.
The Canine Academy started on Friday. I didn't have a dog on Friday. Monday, the actual Friday was administration day. I didn't have a dog. Monday was the day dog training began.
Oh, man. So you were up. So you were like the countdown was on.
It was crazy. So long story short, I go to see her and she's like, "What do you need?" I said, "Well, I just, you know, whatever you can do for me. The bill's $7,000. Okay. Walks upstairs, comes back, gives me an envelope, said, "Hey, come back with that dog. I want to see him." I'm like, "Okay." I'm thinking, you know, $500, maybe $1,000.
Did you already meet Clancy at this point? Did you already know the dog, but you knew it was in a kennel somewhere close by?
I knew it was in a kennel somewhere close by. Never met him. So she comes back down. I look in the envelope. There's $7,000 in the envelope. And she goes, "Look, there's only one thing I want." She goes, "My dog, I just lost my dog a couple years ago. His name was Clancy. All I want in this world is you to rename that dog after my dog." And
oh,
I said,
"I didn't know that part of the story. That's awesome."
So I whatever she wanted for $7,000, she was going to get. And it's funny. I go and get that dog, and the first stop I bring it right back to the Irish pub. And I'm to this day, he's in love. He's probably the only dog allowed in the Irish pub. And he's so sociable.
What about that statue that's right up on the boardwalk? Is that kind of... You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I was there for the dedication. Actually, I have pictures. I'll show it to you. That dog is, you know, not just for Clancy. It was also commemorates all the canines that, you know, work in the line of duty and were killed in the line of
duty.
But
it's a hat tip to Clancy.
It sure is. Okay. It came up with the idea. Matter of fact, when the sculpture...
So this is a sculpture right there on the boardwalk at St. James Place where the Irish pub is.
Correct.
And there's an officer, a public safety officer, right, saluting with a canine right there.
And I actually submitted pictures of Clancy to the sculpture to use during that. Now, his name is not officially Clancy, but it's definitely dedicated to the canine working dogs of the state of New Jersey.
Wow, that's great.
Great story.
We're talking to John Devlin. He's a retired Atlantic City police officer, a canine expert. He's with Clancy, his partner for many, many years. Also a former president of the Atlantic City School Board, now a school board member. And it's... two of the toughest jobs of all time, having to manage and to work with teachers and police and keeping the community safe. I don't know what's tougher, working as a teacher in the education field or working in public safety, but let's stay with public safety for a little longer here. Both really challenging and really important roles. So Kathy Burke of the Irish Pub,
right?
She gives you the $7,000, but many other people certainly wanted to chip in, but she jumped ahead of the line and said, listen, save your whatever, here's the money, go get it. So you meet Clancy for the first time, or you give Clancy that name, and boom, you're off to the races.
So I go to pick him up from the kennel, and it was really love at first sight. And matter of fact, he was a small dog.
How old was he then?
He was about, I want to say like 13 months old. So he was a smaller dog.
But was he trained at that time?
He was very social. I didn't even know what training meant, police training meant. So I get the dog, and I get the canine, and very playful. And I went with another officer because you don't know what you're getting, so everybody, oh, my God, he's so playful. He's so wonderful. So I take him home. I feed him. Get him ready for training because, again, this was Friday. I didn't have a dog until, I believe, this is Saturday night to start.
So this dog could have been just a traditional house dog. So it's not really pre-programmed to do police work, but it has all the natural assets within to become a great police canine.
Right. So when we spoke about earlier the recruiters that go out throughout Europe and France and to choose these dogs, they actually test these dogs. They test them to make sure they can come back here and be a well-trained, well-balanced police dogs. It's a lot of time, a lot of effort, hence $7,000 for, a 13-month-old dog. So anyway, we started the academy the following week, and I always owned dogs, but never obviously a trained dog. And he's literally the top of the class in everything we're doing: agility, obedience.
Yeah, what are those key metrics, those tests that you have to achieve and overachieve with your future partner?
So tracking is huge. One of the biggest things, and this is another misconstrued fact. One of the biggest things with canines and lynx, we do a lot of tracking, a lot of dementia patients, a lot of mental chase patients, a lot of children go missing throughout the course of the year in Atlantic City.
Is that where smell plays a major role?
Oh, huge role, huge roles. One of our major jobs is tracking missing people, and
nobody would know that. They always think about the dog with the mean face. And you think of that right away, but tracking is probably one of the most common ways of working with a police canine.
80% of our work as police officers is tracking and narcotic work.
Missing persons, finding illegal substances.
Right, finding bombs.
But what gets on the front page most often?
Well, what sells the best, Mel? I'll throw that back at you. What's the negative press sells the best? So, canine apprehensions, as justified as they may be, they sell more than, sell bigger headlines. The bigger the action, the bigger the bigger the headline, sadly. So,
So tracking missing persons. Wow.
Huge.
I never even thought of that.
Huge. And over my career, we've tracked, hundreds of missing people, lost people, suspects on the run with weapons, suspects that flee vehicles.
Your success record in doing that is fairly high?
Oh, very high.
And it's all because of the dogs, their senses, their olfactory nerves. That snout is one big giant sniffer that just knows where things are.
It's a combination of great training, great dog, and just a overall companionship and teamwork of the handler and the canine. So the old factory sense that we use, is huge with tracking, but it's only one out of 100 things we do together that make us very, very successful. And other things too is the equipment we use, the vehicles, the long lines, the harnesses, all that stuff costs money. And thanks for a lot of grateful. We're very grateful to a lot of our donors that give us that kind of stuff.
We're talking to John Devlin, retired Atlantic City Police Department, canine, partner to Clancy, as well as a board member of the Atlantic City Board of Education. Getting back to Clancy, do these dogs, these police canines, I'm assuming they view their daily routine, their work, as almost play, I guess. They're just looking to please you. I'm assuming that's in their head. That's the way they operate. They want to please their master. They don't see it as solving a crime. Is there some truth to that thinking of what goes through a dog's mind?
Well, yeah, there's some truth to that, but they do a lot of it as a sport. You know, a lot of the stuff that they're looking for a reward as far as, you know, tracking, narcotics, looking for missing people, stuff like that. There's rewards in training. We give them rewards. So they're thinking, hey, you know, again, it is a game to them, but it's also, they do it for the love of us too. They do it for the love of the handler, because sometimes I don't have a ball in my back pocket or something for them to play with. All I have is a hug and a pat on the back and a pat on the shoulder and say, hey, great job, boy. That's all they live for.
Every year, one of my favorite things to do towards the end of the summer, early fall, is the Margate Dog Show over there in Margate.
Absolutely.
And Stephen Cookies, it's a big dog show, and then you guys come out, and Ventnor comes out, and you put on a canine program. And it is fascinating. Everybody gathers around, and I took lots of pictures over the years, not realizing I was pointing the camera at you. But what I noticed was the canine officers, they were just focused. These guys, are they mainly male or are they female as well? That's a good
great question. They're both. Okay. Both dogs are female. Both handlers are male and female.
I notice their eyes do not move from what their target is. They just are so focused. It's incredible.
Right. Normally, that's what first thing we teach dog is eye contact with me. So anything he does, the first thing he does is look up to me. Hey, Dad, what do I do next? What should I do next? Dad, what do you need? Dad, you know, that's the kind of mentality those dogs have.
What are the potential liabilities of working with a police canine? They do so much great work, but every so often something could go askew, John Devlin.
Right. Well, you know, there's liabilities in all forms of police work. You know, the big thing is everybody wants to use the taser. Well, tasers sometimes don't work, and tasers sometimes take people's lives. So that's a liability. I think you're reading in the press recently of an officer striking somebody with a baton. That's a civil lawsuit. So that's a liability. I can't tell you, however, over the 18 years of my career, how many people sued for being handcuffed. You know, even though that I was, and not, I'm just talking about myself, but police officers are highly trained in handcuffing people. There's no more training, and I've trained as a SWAT team officer. I was in the military. I was at police academy. There's no more training in the world more than the Atlanta County Canine Police training. Now, are they perfect? Absolutely not. Is there room for improvement? Absolutely. The canine training changes every day, every month. And so does the Attorney General guideline policies of how to handle canines. And so does the Atlantic County guidelines policies on how to handle canines. And so does Atlantic City's policy on how to handle canines.
So a couple years back, Atlantic City paused its canine policing. It pulled the dogs off the street. Why did that happen? And then it came back.
That was prior to me being on the canine, but I recall it was more of like a standoff between the chief of police, I think it was John Mooney at the time, and the mayor, Lorenzo Langford, where there was questions about how dogs are deployed, the utilization of dogs, how a dog, you know, basically how are they incorporated into patrol work. And, you know, I think some political factors are involved. The chief acted like he didn't have to answer to the mayor. And so the mayor had the ultimate authority to pull the dogs off the street until his questions were answered. And
how many years were the canines off the street in Atlantic City?
I don't think it was a matter of years. I think it was a matter of months. So once they were off the street and I guess the questions were answered.
How did Chief Mooney get Mr. Langford to greenlight the police canines again? Do you recall, or do you remember that in the news?
I don't recall. I don't believe it was Chief Mooney doing that. I think the mayor at the time did his research and spoke to experts. What they should have done is brought experts in throughout the state and throughout the county. I mean, I think we have some of the greatest legendary canine trainers here in Atlantic County, going back to Dennis McSweeney, who developed the program and who's still around, who still is an expert witness, to Joe Rodriguez, who's a former trainer, to Mike Knight's a former trainer, to Joe Nick, who's the head trainer now with the and who's been training dogs for 40 years, who's the head trainer of Atlantic County, John Sonny Burke Canine Academy. So I don't know. I just thought it was everybody was flexing their muscles when they should have brought in the experts and tell you, you know, what we do, how we do it, and why certain things are done. Because being uneducated creates this thing where, you know, people have misconceptions, and the misconception turns into ignorance.
The biggest misperception to the general public about police canines is?
That they're aggressive. I think, you know, I think they're mean, you know, and that's the furthest thing around truth. We don't even recruit those kind of dogs. We want a social dog. I want to be able to walk into a crowded bar with my dog comfortably and find the bad guy and either escort him out or apprehend him, depending on what the circumstances are.
At the Margate Dog Show, I'm surprised that the kids are everywhere. I think the dogs just love being surrounded by kids.
You know, I'll send you some great pictures because I'm one of the lead, at the time prior to my retirement, I was one of the lead canine demonstrators. Me and Clancy did most of the demonstration. And when he's on point, he's listening. He only does things that he's told to do. Now, understanding police dogs, they're alpha dogs. So, you know, if they're in a dog park, their idea is, hey, this is my dog park. What are you doing here?
How do they deal with other dogs? I never asked you that part. Or do they want to control the other dogs? I'm assuming that answer might be yes.
Well, I was just getting to that. You know, we choose alpha dogs because we want leaders. Just like if you at a law firm, you want the best leader coming out of law school. Same here. We want alpha dogs. Alpha dogs are coming in the room. Hey, I own this room. What are you doing here? I'm going to question why you're here. Same thing with these dogs. You know, like, and there's hundreds of dogs at the dog show. And, you know, as long as they stay back and they're not a threat to anybody, these dogs act on threats. So, you know, one of their things they do, it's instinctively trained in them. John Devlin didn't train them to, hey, he's barking at a guy who's waving a bat. I didn't train him how to do that. He did it on his own. It's instinct. So, but a big part of our training is called socialization. We bring other dogs around because, you know, if I'm running down the street with my dog tracking a man with dementia, and a dog pops out of the weeds, I can't have him chasing a dog or chasing a cat. He has to stay on his point. He has to stay on his job. So we train a lot of time, which is called socialization, meaning I can do off-lead obedience, meaning I don't have a hand on him. He knows to walk next to me and eyes on me and stay focused.
It was fascinating when you brought up the potential liability or the potential risk, but a lot of reward of using tools in policing, whether it's canines, whether it's tasers, whether it's pepper spray, whether it's a firearm. All of them are incredibly helpful, but they also pose some risk if not properly managed and being utilized by a trained professional.
Correct. And everything you just mentioned there is called mechanical force.
Body cams and recording the audio and the video, did that reduce the amount of complaints for somebody saying, yo, you handcuffed me the wrong way?
So the implication of the body camera has been a great thing on both sides of the fence. So
it's got to be tough to be a police officer because you see in certain cities it's worse. But when there is somebody that gets in the face of an officer who's totally trying to be cool, and the average person like me or anybody else would maybe blow a gasket. But when you see people getting in the face of law enforcement with a smartphone and sticking it right in their face while they're cursing at them, I'm amazed at how far we've gone in that direction and how disrespectful some people are.
Well, it's just like kind of like we talked about earlier about training the dogs. It's self-discipline, and those dogs are disciplined. You know, if I'm doing the dog show at Clancy down at in Margate and he sees a little dog he would love to chase around, well, it doesn't work that way. You're working, dude.
What about the future of police canines? Do you see more forces using canines or phasing them out because other technology may be able to replace canines?
Well, you know, I think it's more of a liability factor. I do see other departments dropping the program.
Because they're afraid of getting sued.
Well, that, and it's expensive. It's not cheap to house a dog. I'll give you an example.
But they're really effective overall.
Absolutely. You're never going to get a mechanical device to implement a canine's nose. You're never going to get a mechanical device to make a barking sound to make a suspect surrender.
When you retired and you took Clancy with you, did somebody replace your spot in that regard?
I think they're in the process of replacing him now, yes.
So it's taking close to a year at least.
Well, yeah. The training itself takes, 5 months. So they're going to go out and find a dog, match him with a handler. The whole process of finding a handler that can handle a canine in a police situation is almost as hard as finding a dog that would be suitable for police work. So it's a tough gig to train, and hats off. Listen, I really think, and I'll say this now, even though I'm retired and I'm a little biased, we have the greatest training in the United States by far, probably comparable to Europe. In right here in Atlantic County under Joe Nick and his team at the John Sunnyberg training facility. They get dogs from all over the world. They get trainers from all over the world. They get military people from all over the world. It's so transparent. And not only that, they train a lot of dogs there for companionship, blind dogs, dogs that people that have anxiety. And it's a beautiful tool that we can use. And people just, they look at police dogs and right away they're biting dogs. We have at least 4 dogs that are bomb dogs that wouldn't bite anybody. They don't have that in them. They're trained to seek out bombs, black powder, those type of things. We have narcotic dogs that know nothing about biting. All they know about is scent work and finding that narcotic or that CDS and letting the owner or the handler know that that's what's going on. So I think there's a lot of misconceptions because the public hasn't been educated. And through the dog show down in Margate and through Bass Pro, and we're bringing the dog implementing, as a school board president, I implemented bringing the canines and having canine demonstrations in every school. So if we educate the young about what we do and what canine is all about, we're going to have a better product at the end of the day.